Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and on WLSC AM and FM, it's the one and only Scary Cast, the absolute best in paranormal and interesting topics on the internet. So we're glad to have everybody here. We've got our panel tonight. First of all, the Surgeon General of Scary Cast. From the Midlands of South Carolina, Dr. Trey Donaway. Dr. Trey, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, John, I'm much better. I visited my chiropractor today, and I am fixed.
You are fixed?
Well, not in a gender, reproductive system, but
no, boy.
I did something to my back last week, and I needed to find somebody to fix it, and he fixed it today, so I am good to go.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. So you can shake and bake, right?
I am. My sacroiliac joint is just fine right now, so we're in good shape.
Well, good. Let's hope it stays fine. That's wonderful. And the greatest wrestler in Ravenel, South Carolina, the one and only, the amazing Velvet. How are you doing tonight, Velvet?
I'm wonderful. I'm glad to be here. This is going to be an awesome show, so can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. I've got two of my favorite people on here tonight. First of all, okay, I will introduce this gentleman later. His name is Matt Perry, and he's got a great story for us and a great group to talk about. And so Matt's listening in right now, and he'll be on after. The featured author of Scary Cast, which is none other than John LeMay. How are you doing tonight, John?
Oh, I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me back 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I mean, it just came to my attention that since you have a brand new book, I wanted you to at least tell everybody just a little bit about it so they get out and buy it. And then, as everybody knows, we have John on the first Monday night in the month. So he will be on this on May the 5th, along with his co-author, Noah Torres. And so, John, what's the name of the book? What's it about, and why do we all need a copy? I know we do.
It's called Early 20th Century UFO. You know, if you listen to the show often, I come on and talk about Noe and I's series called The Real Cowboys and Aliens, and we actually exhausted that time period. Our last book was called The Coming of the Airships and ran up to 1899. So we decided when we went into the 20th century, we were going to start a new series, and that's why it's called Early 20th Century UFOs. And I got to be honest, Noe did most of this one. I just helped here and there and did a few chapters, did the marketing and some of the ideas and stuff, but he wrote most of the chapters. And Noe found an amazing story of a man who on the lifeboats of the Titanic, he saw UFOs kind of watching the ship sink. And, you know, when you do a book, you know, they're basically historical vignettes, you know, little stories. Each chapter is something different. So it's tough to decide what you're going to do for your cover. And Noe and I both thought, you know, UFOs over the Titanic, you've got to go with that. That's just too cool. So that's the cover of the book. And also, Noe and I were going to release this book over the summer, and then I was reading an article about the Titanic, and it never occurred to me the Titanic sunk on April 5th, or I think it was like the 14th through the 15th. And so Noe and I thought, well, why don't we just release the book on the anniversary of the Titanic sinking? So that's why we put it out early in the spring. But yeah, lots of chapters in the book. Each one is really interesting. You know, it's not. Not very many of our chapters are just somebody sees a UFO and that's it. For instance, we've got a chapter about some farm boys in Texas in 1914 saw a literal little green man out and kind of in the woods, and their hunting dogs tore them apart. So, I mean, that's an odd story about hunting dogs tearing apart, you know, literally a little green alien. We've got stories about an alien frozen in the ice, and spoiler alert, that one turned out to be a hoax, but we still included it because it's just so interesting. We have in the book the earliest UFO abduction case ever reported to Dr. J. Allen Hynek, which occurred in 1911. another really interesting one. Just all sorts of weird stuff. There were aliens that looked like pigeon people that was written about in the newspapers. There was a man who claimed to project himself onto Mars. So all sorts of stuff in addition to the regular UFO sightings. NOAA even found a UFO sighting over Philadelphia in 1904 that he tied into the famous Philadelphia experiment. So lots of cool stuff.
Well, is it always sunny in Philadelphia? That's my question.
I love that show. I'll say that.
I just had to. I had to. Say, you painted yourself into a corner with that one, so I could come right in with that horrible, horrible joke. Would you do me a favor and do us all a favor? Give us the brief story about the first alien abduction, because that has got to be. In other words, it's not in the Bible. There are stories in there that could be construed as alien abductions, could not. But tell us just a little bit about the 1911 alien abduction.
Yeah, and just to reiterate and be clear, it wasn't the first ever alien abduction so much as it was the first one reported to Dale Tennant, who was very famous UFO researcher. And he received a letter, I think, in the 1970s from a lady who was talking about her deceased sister who made a train trip, I think, in 1911, and she briefly disappeared from the train, and then she came back, and she was very distraught, and she would never tell her family what had happened to her. And years later, she finally opened up that these people from the sky came and took her. And then it's a sad story because she eventually committed suicide because she was so distraught by what had happened to her.
Really? So she would disappear and reappear on the train?
I think I remember. I might be remembering that wrong, but whatever happened to her happened on the train. It happened on her train ride in 1911.
Well, that is amazing. I can't wait to read that, and we'll talk more about that when we get you and Noe on, I think I said May the 3rd, so it's going to be a blast, and thank you so much. And if I want to buy it, where do I go? Do I go to Amazon?
Yeah, Amazon, and again, it's early 20th century UFOs, or just type in my name, John LeMay, and you'll find a whole page of books, but you'll know it if it's a book with UFOs and the Titanic on the cover.
John LeMay, I've got a question for you.
Wow.
Okay. In the early 20th century, were there any sightings similar to the increased recent sightings that we have in all the media today with the multiple lights and traveling across? And is there anything parallel to it or the same?
Yes, I believe Noe found a few UFO sightings that were like fleets of several of them. But I didn't write those. I don't remember exactly what they are, but I'm pretty sure Noe found some.
You know, I can't turn around now without reading about different stories about UFOs. So I was just wondering if any of what we're seeing reportedly today were also present 100 years ago.
Yep, no doubt. And I found the chapter, and I'll find the date. It was over Colorado, and I'm looking for the year. Let's see, the year was September 1917. They observed multiple UFOs. And another interesting chapter I forgot to mention that we have in this book is that Thomas Edison actually theorized that the Spanish flu came from outer space. So we have a chapter about that as well.
So then Nikola Tesla must have written that, and Edison promoted it. Like he tended
well,
to do a
right.
lot.
We have one on Tesla, too, about how Tesla believes he got signals from outer space. That's also in this book. So a lot of stuff in it.
Oh, that's great. I mean, you've got such an incredible and comprehensive series of UFO books and Wild West books, especially focusing on Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett, and you've just done such great work. I love your books. I really do. I feel like Simon Cowell saying, I love your books, John. People need to buy them and read them.
I'm going to get a package in the mail for you tomorrow, and I put the Classic Monsters one in there, too, the new one. So.
Oh, thanks, because I want to read this so I can get some stuff out to our panelists before we have our big shindig with you and Noe on May the 3rd. Yeah, May the 3rd, that's correct. We got so many dates. And if anybody wants to know the upcoming schedule for the next month, 2 months, for ScaryCast, just go to Facebook. Next week we have Communicating with the Dead. Devin Tate and Robin McCrae are going to discuss and try to get in touch with a deceased friend of his. Of course, on the 26th of April, we have New Cryptids. Devin Tate and I are going to talk about, he's got a cryptid story that nobody's ever heard of, and then I'm going to talk about some results from a fellow, he's a cryptozoologist in Australia. I've got one of his books, and so we're going to talk about new results in cryptozoology. Then, of course, John LeMay is on the 3rd of May. Kevin Podesti is going to talk about his paranormal experiences, and I met Kevin through the Vulnerability Group. We have become big paranormal buddies, I'll tell you that, Matt. And then on the 17th, we've got William Billy the Kid is going to come on. John LeMay, you're welcome to join us because you have done your Billy the Kid. And then, of course, on the 24th, we're going to have outtakes, live 8 to outtakes of a ghost hunt with a ghost box from the South Carolina Confederate Museum. And that ghost hunt is going to take place on the 22nd of May. So we have got some gangbuster shows coming up, and they are available, of course, they're all cataloged on the internet, on Facebook, and you can listen to them every week on WLSC Loris at midnight on Saturday night. We finally made it. We have an overnight midnight paranormal show, so I couldn't be any more excited, and thanks to Banana Jack Murphy Productions and all the folks at WLSC AM and FM for getting us on there. It's just going to be a lot of fun. So, John LeMay, thanks for coming on. I know that people enjoy hearing you talk, and the more we talk about you, the more people will be able to buy and enjoy your books, and I think that's very important. So, look, thank you very much for coming on the spur of the moment and telling us these few tidbits that are going to make everybody want to read your books, okay?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, John, and y'all have fun.
Oh, we will.
Thank
all right,
you
well,
John.
Good talking
to
you,
John.
Yep, so thanks a lot. And now we have another very special guest. It's Matt Perry, and he's got a mega group on the internet called Vulnerability is Cool. It was so cool that I just said, let's do a podcast. So we do a podcast every week called Vulnerability is Cool, and we're getting more and more people to listen. So I'm going to say, John, Matt Perry, welcome to ScaryCast. How are you doing tonight?
Dr. John, I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me tonight.
You have got, I'm going to tell everybody a little bit about what I know. You've got a mega group with almost 1,000 people in it that you've assembled in less than 90 days called Vulnerability is Cool. And then you've, using the Clubhouse app, you've got over 1,000 people on your talk on Thursday night. And we're starting to get some traction with the Vulnerability podcast. So take it away. Tell us what it's about, because a lot of our listeners and our co-hosts don't really know what it is. So after we've been talking about it for the last 3 weeks and trying to find it, tell everybody what it is, and we'll go from there.
That's awesome. Well, again, thank you for having me, Dr. John, and that was a wonderful lead-in. So I looked at the way we were engaging in social media as a collective society, and I was frustrated. How many times do you walk into a grocery store or you're out to eat, and all you see are people locked in to their phones? And then they're engaging in social media in such depthless and inauthentic ways. And we post on our Facebook or Instagram about us buying a new car or taking our 12th trip of the year or whatever. we don't show and express who we are as people. We don't express the triumphs and tribulations. And that's really made social media very safe in some ways, and that's trickled over to society. And our goal is to fundamentally redefine that. We want people to express their complete selves. And that's what we try to do in this group. It's a container where people can express what they're going through, and we're excited about it. So we started this with a Facebook group, and what we do in this group is we offer everyone in the group one daily challenge. Some of the challenges are really fun and lighthearted. Most of them are. And that's a way to get others to connect and communicate. So we'll have days where it's like, oh, what's your favorite pizza? Or we'll have challenges like, do you like Dunkin' Donuts versus Starbucks? And people can write in, or they can do a video expressing their answers. And then some days, some of the really difficult days where you don't see on Facebook are things like, what's a shame, something shameful you've endured that you really haven't expressed to someone before? Or please let us know the hardships you've endured during COVID-19. And we create that space and we foster that environment where people really feel like they can be themselves. And then, so we started with Facebook, and then we went to Clubhouse. So Clubhouse, for the viewers that are unfamiliar with Clubhouse, it is currently the hottest new app in the entire world. It is iPhone only. It is also invite only. So if there's any viewers of yours that's interested in joining, we do have plenty of invites, so we'd love to help accommodate them to get on the app. There's a lot of elite contacts on there. Only those who are really connected are actually on that app, so we're certainly blessed to be a part of that new experience. And as you mentioned, we're connecting with thousands of people every single day on that app. So it's a great opportunity for us to get our message out there. And essentially what this app is, it's a virtual stage. So it allows us to conduct an event, to talk about a certain topic that night or maybe a slew of topics. And then those who are joining our room have the opportunity to hit the microphone, and then we can have some sort of a round table discussion. That's the format that I prefer. But everyone has a microphone, and then once a speaker is completed, someone can then hit the microphone and then respond accordingly, and that's kind of the dialogue that we like to have. So it's an exciting new app. We're up to some really big things. And then certainly Sunday nights with you, Dr. John, it is a real pleasure that we're with you for an hour, hour and a half, discussing what we're doing and going further into our mission. So in sum, over the last 70 days or so, we've done quite a bit, and I'm super excited. And one more thing before I wrap up here, it was my introduction. Yes, we have 1,000 members, but what I'm truly most proud of is we have members from 62 different countries, from 6 continents. We haven't gotten penguins yet, so we haven't knocked off Antarctica, but I'm super proud of the diversity we have, and I'm excited to continue expanding the map. So thank you, Dr. John, for having me tonight.
Well, okay, first, two things. First of all, explain why the word vulnerability, and our co-host from Vulnerability Podcast, Tori, has joined us. How are you doing tonight, Tori?
I'm good. How are you?
Great to have you here and join us with Matt and all of our co-hosts with Scarycast. So Matt, tell us why the word vulnerability, and how does that really play into this? Because that's the key element of this whole vulnerability podcast.
Absolutely. I first want to thank Tori. Tori is a very good friend of mine, and she is one of my best friends, and I consider her family already. And I love that she came on right now, because her and I did this challenge together, and that's how we met. And this challenge was a 21-day self-improvement kind of a course. And through that container, they were offering challenges. And again, it's only 21 days. But what I noticed is in that container, people were actually expressing things that they've gone through. And I saw, I was like, wow, when people express something they've endured, we see how many other people are also dealing with similar challenges, and that encourages them to want to share something similar. And the camaraderie that we're able to build as a small, you know, short acting community was impressive. Tori and I are as close as we are 3 months later, I think is indicative of that. And it epitomizes exactly what we're trying to do. When I express that I'm hurting over this topic, well, then I find out that Tori is going through the same thing. And I find that Mark is going through the same thing. And Dr. John, you might be going through the same thing. And that helps connect all of us in ways that we wouldn't have been able to do so previously. We have fundamentally built that relationship in ways that, you know, us just sharing that we went out and we bought a new BMW is not going to allow for. It's not going to allow for that depthful connection, that vulnerable post will allow for. So that's why I think vulnerability is so important. And vulnerability, in my view, is the foundation for building any strong connection. Thanks, Dr. John.
Yeah. I agree. I've met some quite amazing people on vulnerability is cool. How about you, Tori? What have you gotten from it, and how do you feel about the title vulnerability? How has that helped you make new friends? Because I know you've made lots of friends. You're a nice person, and I've gotten to know you in the last 3 weeks. I mean, it's wonderful. So tell us how that has really enriched your life. I think that's the right word to say, yeah.
It has most certainly enriched my life. That's a good word for it. My life is absolutely transformed since the beginning of this year. And I would really credit a lot of it to Matt and what he's doing with this vulnerability group and what he started. Because, yes, we were in this challenge together, and I was getting a lot out of it. But when he started sharing the deeply vulnerable posts that he began to share, he was sort of like the first one to put that brave foot out there and be like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to open up and I'm going to share some deeply personal things and maybe it'll help somebody else. And it was just this, it felt to me like this beautiful act of service that he was doing for everyone at the same time he was healing himself. And it was so moving to me, and I could relate on such a personal level to some of the things that he was sharing. And it was just absolutely transformative for me because I was sort of stuck in a place in my life where I was avoiding the dark and twisty feelings. And I was trying to just, you know, overpower everything with positivity. And that can work for a time. But there comes a time where you have to actually clean out the closet and get rid of that junk too. And I was able to start doing that because I saw him take those brave steps and start sharing those things. And I was like, you know what, if he can do that, I can do that too. And so I started doing that. And then I saw other people doing it. And it just sort of started growing and catching on from there. And then when he told me he was going to do this Facebook group, I was like, sign me up, because yeah, I think it has potential to change the world, because I really feel that, like Matt said, when you have vulnerable connections, when you're willing to be brave, when you're willing to make a fool of yourself, if that's what's necessary to make a connection with people, that's how we break through these walls that we build up to protect ourselves from the world. And I really think we need a little bit more of the things that break those walls down. And I really, really believe in this as a way to do that. Thanks. I was a little long-winded, but thank you for listening.
Yeah, that's great. Now, my two co-hosts, I actually had something for every co-host that came on tonight that was able to be with us. But I think you'll see how this transformation really fits into the things that we do. Amazing Velvet, you deal with wrestlers. People really don't know what the rest, they don't know what the wrestling community inside of it is, what it is. They don't know how close the wrestling community is. And by and large, yes, there are those loners. They're the ones that are just not part of it. But don't you agree that the wrestling community, the professional wrestling community, is a huge support group, Amazing Velvet?
Well, absolutely. We support one another in the good times and bad times, just like what they're doing with their group, you know. And it is vulnerability in the professional wrestling business as well, because a lot of people have shortcomings, and or they fall through the cracks, or, you know, things happen and they think their career's over. But, you know, that's what the community's all about, is to dust you off and build you back up. And that's why it's a brotherhood and sisterhood. We are family. A lot of people don't understand it. Back in the 70s and 80s, it was deemed a cult. It really wasn't a cult. It was just family. You know, it's a little broad now. It's kind of gotten a little darkness to it in this era because of the new breed of wrestlers, but it's slowly turning around. It's a thing that you can call anybody up or go online and hit them up and say, hey man, you know, this is what happened to me, you know, this and that, and blah blah blah. So, you know, it's something that we can all sit down and talk about and discuss. And that's what I like about it. Whether you're on the phone, in an arena, in a gym, whatever, close to the community. And people just don't get it, you know. But, wrestlers are people too, you know. They're out there doing something that some people don't like, some people do, you know. But this is entertainment.
Wrestlers are people too. You better believe it. And that was well put, and I had mentioned this week on the podcast that wrestling really fit in, and I knew you would, Matt, you'd be on the show tonight, and I knew Velvet would be with us, and I think he reiterated a lot of what I said. You find these communities. Now, Dr. Trey Donaway, our Surgeon General of Scarycast, has truly created a magnificent community of folks that are interested in history. They are reenactors. They put on reenactments. They put on reenactments of battles and everything. But Dr. Trey, don't your people really love what they do, and they kind of all gang together and bind together as one when they do it, don't they?
Oh yeah, it's a big weekend where people come from all corners of the nation and do Revolutionary War reenactment and living history, and it's but I can see this is a useful thing for any focus area of interest that people have. But I do have I got a little technical question. When I look up, when I'm looking at right now, when I'm looking at a clubhouse, there are a couple of different clubhouses. So which clubhouse is it? Is it Clubhouse Drop-In and Audio Chat, where the icon is a black and white photograph of a guy with a billed hat and he's looking to the left, or
that's
which,
the one.
Which, that's the one. And it looks like you have to be invited to join it. So you find somebody that's in it and then you can be invited. And can you create a group? I presume you can, for an invitation into a group. You know, one of the things I've thoroughly enjoyed is my fraternity brothers. We all went separate ways after we graduated, and through social media and through actually, I think it's a Google chat, we still can communicate, but we don't usually do audio. So I think this would be a good thing for a group like that, a social group.
Absolutely. So yes, you can create groups. I'm sorry. Yeah, you can create groups within the app. And what's cool is, so say your fraternity, you know, brothers had some sort of common interest or a common topic you'd like to talk about, you can actually create the room and then again invite people from the outside in, and now you're able to, I think they're just opening up monetization too. So if you want to create a business within the context of Clubhouse, that's something that's offered as well. Our products are all free, but again, that's an option for those who are in Clubhouse now.
So in order to subscribe to Clubhouse, do I just go to the App Store on iPhone and just say get it? But then to actually participate, you have to be invited, but you can download the app in the meantime?
That's correct, yeah. Now, so say I had your number, for example, and I have plenty of invites. Someone who has an invite or myself, I'd put you into my contacts, and then I would then go into Clubhouse, and then through there I can actually search contacts, and I'd click on your name or whoever, and then it would say send invite. And then it will send that person an actual link to download the app, and then there's some sort of a code already there, so it's already sort of programmed for their phone.
Right, and you have to use an iPhone to do this, correct?
Currently, correct.
And is it like Skype, where there's a limit to the amount of time you can meet in this clubhouse, or is it unlimited, or...
Or you could be in there 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Okay. All right. Well, I've downloaded it, and I'll knock around. Not tonight, but another time. I'll knock around and see what it has. It sounds very interesting. I was not familiar with the app. I'm glad you could tell me how to get it.
My pleasure.
And I think the approach here is a lot different than a Facebook group. A Facebook group is about as newsy as you can be. It's like, well, what's happened? Who saw, like the cryptid ones I'm in, who saw this monster? Who saw that monster? Who's going to go to this event? It's all about news. But what you're doing is you're taking it one step farther, and it's about how do we feel about things, and let's share our feelings, because that's not what I see in Facebook groups. And I think, I think you've done a good bit of that in yours, Matt, to really approach that. But in the Facebook groups I'm in, it's just all about news, weather, and sport. It's not about communication or trying to reach out to people. So I think in this way, you really have expanded on the notion of a Facebook group we'll come up with a name for this sooner than later, probably sooner. It's a phenomenon. It's a new way of looking at a group, and it's a very personal way of looking at a group. And I like it. I think it's wonderful to be on the cutting edge of this. And Amazing Velvet, I think something like this for wrestlers would be absolutely phenomenal. We're involved in the Cauliflower Alley Club. And the whole purpose of that is called the Ring of Friendship. And this is what they want to be, but I don't believe they have the mechanism like Clubhouse you go on the – and listen, I love Cauliflower Alley. Make no mistake about it. They do a wonderful job. But, I mean, they're fairly newsy in their group. I mean, it's like, oh, well, this happened, this one passed away, this one whatever. And I don't think they get down to the personal level that we're doing here with Vulnerability is Cool. So I think Matt really has expanded the notion of a Facebook group to something more universal, something that can really attract people, and I think it would be good. I think in terms of wrestling, it would be phenomenal. In terms of historical reenactment, it's not about which reenactment's coming, which battle is next. How do you feel? What do you really think about the history? What have you learned about the history? And just an initial blush of what it could be done. So I. Wonderful. So, Matt, have I gone too far, or do you, I'm kind of hitting on what you're trying to do?
No, I think you've explained this perfectly. And the thought that came to mind is just the diversity and the subjects you bring up, everything falls under vulnerability. Everything. And in our clubhouses, the way I tend to run the events are I sort of just say, vulnerability is cool. I leave it at that, and I just basically explain our mission, and I let the night organically unfold. 2 weeks ago, our room lasted 8.5 hours. We had 8.5 hours of discussion. Last week, I think we went 6 hours. And in the course of the night, we're covering some really wide-ranging topics. We're talking about some societal matters, political matters, body issues, past, you know, abuse. We're talking about every possible thing. We're offering people that safe container to feel that they can express themselves, but not only express themselves, but be able to truly be who they are without any fear of judgment. And I know that's something that we talked about last night too, about our position of allowing people to express position as long as they're respectful, without worrying about And I find that a lot of safe spaces sometimes say, well, you can't say this, you can't say that. We're not about that. What we're about is allowing people to be authentic. And it seems like that environment is something that people are really clamoring for. And as such, we found that everyone's been very respectful. And again, the camaraderie that's grown has been truly remarkable.
Well, I don't know if you noticed what I said, but Kevin, he was on the podcast last night, the Vulnerability Podcast. He's now going to be a guest on ScaryCast. We talked some last night. We had a lot of common ground in terms of the paranormal world, and I shared some stories, and he did too. And called up today just to say hello. I said, you need to be on ScaryCast and tell some of your stories. He said, oh, I really want to. So, you know, it's interesting to make a friend that – Yeah, because, you know, it's safe and cool to talk about, well, we talk about the paranormal, and it's not always cool to talk about the paranormal. I'm going to tell you, you got to be careful where you talk about it, or you'll catch hell for it. No pun intended. So I think it's a good thing. It's a great way to meet like-minded people who are interested in sharing personal experiences. And of course, I've got a lot of personal paranormal experiences. That's why I started ScaryCast. But no, it's really a wonderful thing. And where do you see, and Tori, join in with this, where do you see this going? If I had to say years, what do you think you'll have? Terrible question. I always ask the toughest questions, but they always get the best answers. So, all right, Tori and in 5 years, what are you going to have? I love it.
Tori, you want to go first?
Matt,
go?
I want you to go first. Explain your vision.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, like I said, how much we've actually already conquered in just 70 days. I think the outlook is certainly bright. And the fact that we're already on the forefront of massive growth on this hot app, exciting, very exciting. And for me, I would love to see us develop our own platform, our own app, where we can allow people to connect. So basically take what we're doing already within our pre-existing community on Facebook and actually have our own creation. I think that'd be pretty awesome. And we can connect people. We can have events and meetups. I think that would be exciting. And it's actually something that already a number of our members have requested that we offer. So there's already existing engagement and interest in doing that. And, yeah, I mean, beyond that, right now, it's just expanding what we're already doing. So we're at 1,000 members now, 62 different countries. I'd like to have us reach every single country that we can, you know, politically actually reach and whatnot. I would love to get to a point where we're talking about 1 million members or even more, that we have an international outreach. I think that we definitely have the opportunity to potentially reach that number. So, and I think we do that through all these different methods that we're using, whether it's Clubhouse, whether it's this amazing podcast with you, Dr. John. Every time we're expressing what we're doing and the mission behind it, every time we do this, it's taking us closer and closer to those ultimate goals. So thank you, Dr. John, for being a part of our community and being part of pushing our mission.
I'll call you right after this podcast and tell you where I see it, because I better tell you first before I announce it. But, no, I think it has a lot of potential. And the fact that you've got a great friend, Tori, that you basically made through an endeavor like this is wonderful. I made my first friend, paranormal friend. I got a new paranormal buddy. I already got the Amazing Velvet. I've got Devin Tate. I've got Robin. I've got the Surgeon General, Dr. Trey. All of you guys are great friends, and we talk about paranormal and all this interesting things. But you know what? There aren't many of you, and it's a great way to find more and more people. I guess it's a repetitive thing. You can find more growth. You can it's an economy of scale with your time. I don't mean to sound so blunt, but it is. It's an economy of scale. It's a great way to find folks that have similar interests. And I asked you, Matt, the very first time I talked to you, well, could I get a group, a subgroup within it, kind of like a subreddit of folks that are interested in the paranormal? I've got my first member now, and we want to do more. We want to have within the vulnerability group. I think paranormal experiences are something that you sometimes kind of want to share with like-minded people. So this might be the paranormal tends to lend itself to a vulnerability is cool, personal experiences kind of thing. At least that's what I think. So why don't we go around and let's give an opinion and pose a question. We've got one, two, three, four. We have five people on the show. We got time to do that, and I think it'll be fun. I'm going to start with the Amazing Velvet, make a comment, and then ask a question of Matt, because Matt's the ringleader.
Matt's the ringleader. Love it. I love
he
it.
Is.
I think that's a great app. I think that you stumbled onto something that's really remarkable, and it can help a lot of people in so many different ways. There's so many different platforms that can be put onto that thing, and so many, you know, algorithms of people. And you think about it in the shortfall of it, you could have thousands and thousands of people on any given night, and I think that's pretty awesome. My question would be, what happens down the road if it gets way too big? Where's the backfall for that if something were to happen where it's outgrown itself, basically?
That's a great question. You know, I'd say so far,
I mean,
I don't
being
think
that you're
have...
far off from that right now, but I'm just saying.
Well, absolutely. Well, I'm always optimistic that we can grow at the rate that I would like to see it grow. Yeah, I mean, I think that part of me, to be fair, I think we saw such quick growth. Like at first, like whoa, and then all these people were reaching out to me, and it was a lot to juggle all these new interactions. I think as things have stabilized and I've gotten to know everybody, gotten much more flexible, I think I'd have to have some sort of team in place that would be able to keep up with it. I don't think I could be a one-man band, you know, managing a potential, you know, million-person group. But in your hypothetical scenario, I feel like what I would do is I would just try to assemble a team. I think I've developed a lot of really good connections, and we would try to find some way to combat that while trying to keep the integrity of our community intact, so that way people still feel engaged, people still feel comfortable to share. So I think it would be a little bit of a challenge to battle the two, but I feel really confident in our community and in my abilities to get that taken care of. Thank you for the question.
Awesome. Awesome. Very good.
Great job. And I will make a comment. I think Reddit has done a wonderful job for what they are. They are more of a news group hierarchy than they are what Vulnerability Podcast is. But I think Reddit has proven that you can do it. They are massive. They're the seventh largest website in the world, and they figured out how to do it. They've done a great job. And who is it? The founder of Reddit is married to not Venus Williams, Serena Williams, isn't he?
I don't know.
I think he is. I think I saw him. Yeah, so anyway, I mean, they've proven that they can do it. So that's wonderful. All right, Tori, thanks for being with us. Make a comment about all this and ask a question.
I'm sorry.
What I'd like you to do is make a comment about this whole vulnerability is cool thing, and then ask a question about it, and we can discuss it just a little bit, like kind of like the Amazing Velvet did.
Okay, come back around to me. Come back around to me.
I'll come back around to you.
We're gonna circle back. I got it.
Circle back.
Okay. Our Surgeon General, Dr. make a comment about and pose a question, if you would please, kind sir.
I don't understand the mechanics of it as well. If people talk about medical issues, for instance, in the profession, we have very strict requirements, and you have to have privacy and HIPAA. If you're exposing something to a large crowd, that's entirely up to you. You can share whatever you want. But as your crowds get larger and larger, I would think there would be some people that would try to take advantage of other people or abuse that relationship or make someone very vulnerable in what they might be discussing. What safeguards are there built in so you can do you block people? Do you toss them out of the clubhouse? Do you have certain standards they have to adhere to? How does the privacy issue come in with vulnerability? Certainly, it's good to express and to communicate things that maybe you feel in a supportive group. But if you have 1,000 people in the room, it's not like a one-on-one conversation where you can get to know them well and share things that you might not share publicly, but you're still sharing them very publicly in a large group. So what are the safeguards what are the guardrails that you've built into this to protect people?
Thank you for the question. So our Facebook group is private. So, for example, when you have a public group and you make a post, all of your personal connections can actually see that. So one thing that we've done is we've closed it off, and it is private. So only those in the container itself, our project, Vulnerability School, will be able to see that. But then once they post in that, it's public within that group. So once somebody makes the choice to disclose anything, medical, personal, whatever, they're willingly in acknowledging that they're putting it out into that public space within that private group. Now, in regards to, bad behavior, again, we've been operating for about 2.5 months now. We have people from all over the world. We've only had actually one problem, and it wasn't even somebody who was necessarily rude to someone per se, but the guy thought it was appropriate to post, a fairly nude photo of him on the group, and needless to say, he was asked to go away. So we have the ability to block people, remove comments, And if certainly people are violating any of our rules or guidelines, they'll certainly be asked to take a vacation. Now, specifically regarding the clubhouse, what's nice about the clubhouse and I think it helps foster some level of vulnerability too, is that it's like a virtual stage. So I could be talking, you could be talking. It's kind of podcast-like, but there's no recording of it. So you could possibly disclose, you know, the most vulnerable aspects of your personal health, and only those people there that night on that stage will hear it. There's no recording of it. There's nothing. So I feel in sum that the media in which we offer, we are doing it in the most secure way possible, and we're offering it in outlets where, you know, people have the ability to express themselves without fear of maybe those who they don't want to know it, for example. It won't get in their hands in some. So I feel we've done everything we can to offer that safe space to people.
I know in Zoom meetings, there was people would crash a Zoom meeting and do things that you really don't want them doing on a Zoom meeting. And it was people that got a hold of the password to get into that meeting room. And the two organizations I've worked with went to extraordinary lengths to prevent that from happening. But again, this is just invitation only. So you're either a member or not a member. And it's not an open invitation for whoever. Is that true, or how do you work that arrangement?
So our rooms, the rooms we run, are actually public. So we do that as a way to try to get new members in. So technically, if you're on the app, that you can, we can have people outside of our group, you know, enter. You know, to be fair, we actually did have one night where we had a troll come on, quote unquote, a troll came on, and
right.
They sort of wanted to just create some level of, they're basically just saying that being vulnerable is not worth it, and it's just going to ruin your life, et cetera. That's what they're trying to convey. And quickly we got them, we allowed them to express their opinion, even though it was kind of hard for members to hear that, since it's going against everything we stand for. But one thing that we do stand for is we do allow people to speak. But they ended up being kind of rude to one of our members, and that's when we told them, you got to go, you got to leave. So, and if they chose not to leave the space as a moderator of the room, I had the ability to kick them out, and that's what I ended up doing.
Gotcha. Okay. So most of when you have a meeting in the clubhouse, for vulnerability is cool, you're the moderator. So you have ultimate control over people if they get out of line.
Correct. Yeah, I take the microphone away, and I can kick them out too.
Gotcha. Very good.
Nice.
Yeah, and I guess to follow along with that, you're probably, as this thing grows, you're probably going to have to get some co-moderators. Because you won't be able to do it.
I have one guy named Jake Leibowitz. He also is from Connecticut, and he actually was responsible for us getting on Clubhouse. And Jake is very special to me. He's a great guy, and he ended up getting us on Clubhouse, and he's helped run a few of the nights. He's a pretty busy dude, so unfortunately we haven't seen him every Thursday, but he's been on there a few nights. But he was integral in terms of us getting on there and starting the club. And then furthermore, Tori. Tori's also stepped up, and she's been a co-moderator for us a number of weeks as well. So, and having them as well helps me sort of, because when you enter the room, people automatically go in the audience, which means that they don't have microphone capabilities. So then they can quote-unquote raise their hand, which then allows, if we approve that, it gives them the ability to come on stage and to speak. So by having another moderator who has the controls, they're able to then invite those people up and handle some of the backlog of that. So it's definitely helpful having other people on there.
Okay.
So the way it's set up, you don't have people talking over each other. They raise their hand, you hand them the microphone, and then when they finish saying what they're going to say, you give it to somebody else?
Every room is a little bit different based on how the moderators want to run it. Now, most rooms actually go in a defined order. So the moderators will be at the top, and then everyone who's come on stage will be in order based on when they raise their hand and were invited on stage. And then there's the people in the audience who don't have the capabilities. So how most rooms run is they'll run in that sort of chronological order. I personally do not run the room that way because I find it gets a little monotonous. And if you're looking to speak and you want to make a point, I feel like you could be just sitting on stage for 20 minutes. And by the time it's your turn to speak, it's kind of like that, whatever was coming up, it's no longer relevant. So what I try to do
is it loses its relevancy.
Like, so I envision it like it's like a round table and everybody's got a microphone. So if, you know, person A just spoke and person F, you know, is like wants to chime in, I allow them to do that. Now, usually when people are done speaking, they sort of yield it back to me. But in a lot of cases, sometimes the conversation goes between 2, 3, 4, 5 people, and I certainly encourage that. I always say the longer that I don't speak, I'm certainly a happy camper. So I like the conversation to unfold organically.
All right. Well, thank you for that answer. Tori, do you have a comment and a question for Matt?
So a question that I thought of is, first of all, it was one of you answered my first question while you were answering the previous question, which is really funny. But so I came up with another question, which is how do you – because sometimes being vulnerable is difficult for people. So how do you encourage people to sort of break out of their shell and share something? What are the things that you can do to help encourage people to participate in the clubhouses when they're in there or participate in posting and sharing things that way? So what are some of the things that you do to encourage participation?
That's a great question, Tori. I think be myself. Because when I'm myself, I encourage other people to do the same. And I've noticed that every time I sort of make one of my really deeply and profoundly personal posts, it encourages other people to do that as well. And I feel like it actually creates some level of motivation in others to be like, oh, this group is really cool, and now I want to take my time to invite other people to come as well. So I notice every time I really go and take that personal stretch, I notice we end up getting like 100 new members over the next few days. So I think it creates some sort of a reverberatory effect amongst the entire community when I go and be really personal. On the other end of the spectrum, I notice that when I'm like really fun and really excited, I think that that creates sort of another level of engagement where people are like, oh, I like that guy. I can relate to him. And I think seeing that in some, I think that creates that engagement. And I am kind of myself. Like when I'm in a good mood, like I am. I'm really high energy. I can be funny. Like that's just who I am. And trying to exude that sort of magnetism is something I try to do, and certainly I think it's been working so far, and I'm grateful for everyone who's been a part of our community.
Well, that's great. And so what I'd like to say is thank you to everybody who was on tonight. It was a lot of fun. I felt that vulnerability is cool. It's a little bit of a groundbreaking thing. And I wanted ScaryCast to get credit for publicizing it first. I think it's important. We've talked about it. It's a platform that can be used for a lot of different applications. And there'll be a lot of people on WLSC about this Sunday night. And we'll just keep promoting it because I enjoy running the podcast. I'm addicted to running podcasts. I think it's great. So first of all, I want to thank our guest, Matt Perry. And I want to thank Tori for being on with us, and we've enjoyed having you. John LeMay, thanks a lot from all the way over there in Roswell, New Mexico. Can't wait to get the book, and we'll have him and Noe Torres on May the 3rd. That'll be a blast. Like to thank my co-host tonight, the amazing Velvet, and who was a little under the weather, but he made it anyway. And, of course, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Donaway. Thanks to everybody who was on. We'll see you next week on ScaryCast. And Robin McCray, two of our co-hosts, are actually the program, and they are going to talk about speaking with those who are deceased, and there Robin is going to try to talk to Devin Cray, who passed away. I mean, I can't think of a better possible program. I mean, we have the good ones here, so thanks so much to everybody for being here with us. We'll see you next week, 9 o'clock Monday night on the Internet, and midnight Saturday night on WLSC Lewis, and that is on tigerradio.com. You go to Tiger Radio anywhere in the world, and you can hear it. So thanks a lot, and I'll do my traditional call around to my co-host. Thanks a lot to everybody, and we'll see you.
Thank you, John. Enjoyed it.
Thanks, Dr. John. I appreciate it.